Drunk on Comics, episode 113. On this week's show, we discuss Doc Ock being back in the driver's seat of Superior Spider-Man, a double story in the pages of Punisher and Black Widow, and the mindfuck that is The Bunker. Guardians of the Galaxy killed it at the box office this past week, while DC has also moved up Superman vs. Batman, and we are now hearing how superhero movies will be dominating theaters for the next 5+ years. We also have some other non-movie news somewhere within this podcast. So with that, here's episode 113 of Drunk on Comics. All right, welcome to Drunk on Comics.
Wait.
What, you're not ready yet?
No, well, you didn't give yourself enough time to clip that. Give yourself at least a second, man.
Okay. Second. Welcome to Drunk on Comics.
What's Drunk on Comics?
It is our podcast.
What's a podcast?
It's when a green bean breaks its pod and needs to have a cast put on.
Okay. I think it's going to be a good show today. Yeah. Well, my name's Derek.
My name's Tony.
And as Tony mentioned, this is our podcast, which if you're listening to it, you should probably know what a podcast is.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
I don't know why anyone would be listening to a podcast not knowing what the hell a podcast is.
I don't know. We get weird people like stumbling onto our website. Like I see weird ways that people come in. And there are some sick people out there. I just want to tell you the weird word searches that people have that lead them to our site.
Oh, okay. I was going to be like, I thought the only way to get to our site is through the internet. I didn't know there's other ways to
magically enter. Well, yeah, but if you do keyword search and somehow there just happens to be random weird keywords in our descriptions of things that people are searching for, and there's some filthy fuckers out there. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
But anyway, not that drunkoncomics.com has any of that stuff. It's a good, clean, wholesome,
family-friendly, neighborhood Spider-Man show.
Adult family-friendly.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. You know, adult children. So, anyway, should we get things kicked off here?
Yep.
All right, do you want to start or you want me to?
I want you to, only because I have to pick out my book again.
What do you mean you have to pick out your book again? It's sitting right there.
And then really look down and it's actually right on top of the pile, so never mind.
Yeah.
But I'm still going to make you go first because you don't have yours set yet.
Well, I got mine. Oh, okay. They're right here.
Oh, you have what, there?
Yeah, there,
you
here.
Have two?
I have two. And you'll understand why, because this is, well, let me back up here first. Credit first and titles. The Punisher, number 9 from Marvel. And this is written by Nathan Edmondson. Mitch Gerards did the art. VC's Corey Pettit did the letters. Also, Black Widow, number 9, which is also written by Nathan Edmondson. Art in this is Phil Noto. Letters is VC's Clayton Cowles. And the reason that it almost feels like I'm pairing these together. It's like it's like a weird time warp, which Marvel knows nothing about time warp.
Time travel? No.
Yeah. But it almost feels like a booze in a book because, you know, you're pairing these together. But this is actually a two-part story, kind of, okay. In two separate titles. And the reason, now, I had been picking up The Black Widow when it first came out, and fantastic book. But because of the sheer volume of stuff that I read, it kind of got pushed towards the back of my list, and I went, I'm 2-3 issues behind. I'm going to drop it. Well, that was like 1 or 2 issues ago. And now I see that it's tied in with The Punisher, which I'm still current on and I'm still really liking. And
did you, so obviously reading this one, did you miss anything in the last 2 issues, you think?
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely missed stuff, but this was cool. And the reason that I want to bring these up is, number one, if you're only reading one of these, you should pick up the other one, at least of this issue. Now, and it even says right in the beginning, And the Punisher one says, and for the rest of the story, read Black Widow number 9 on sale now. So both these came out this week, which was cool. In the Black Widow, it says, for the other side of the story, check out Punisher number 9.
So was there a book 1, book 2, or it was
no.
side by side?
This is the same story taking place in the same time. And there are parts of it, and because Edmondson wrote both of these, there are panels where the Punisher and Black Widow are together, and it's word for word, you know, spatially, you know, set, even though you've got two different artists, the exact same way. It's identical. So
is it like the layout the same too, or just the wording?
The wording's the same, but now like their placement, you know, each artist took their own, you know, cue as to how they wanted to draw it. But it's the same story. So it's almost like you and I have our day today where, you know, we spend together and, like, you know, I came in and we chatted for a while and then you ran off and did something. I ran off and did something. We came back. We do this and then we both leave and we do some more stuff and then we come back together. Well, the Punisher is his side of everything that happened. The Black Widow is her side of everything that happened. So it's kind of a cool idea.
I've always liked those in old cartoons like Tiny Toons or whatever when they would do one of those. You have this overall story, or The Simpsons did a really good one where the day of Milhouse and then the day of Bart, and you saw these things where they kind of interacted at different parts, but then you started seeing the whole picture of the whole, everyone had their different, yeah, little minute, what they did for the day, and it all interacted in some way or another. So I know exactly what you're saying, and that's pretty badass for a comic book.
Yeah, I was very impressed. Let me touch a little bit on the artwork first. With the Punisher with Mitch Gerards, this is a little bit more of what you would expect for a standard, you know, Marvel type story in here. The one thing that I really want to point out is that both of these artists, Gerards and Noto, are doing all of the art, pencils, inks, colors. And the one thing where Gerards, I think, really, you know, where he really shined was, is it shined or shone?
Shined, I think.
Shoned. Where he shoned.
Okay. Sounds like something I'd say.
His colors. Man, his colors were just awesome. I mean, it really helped everything pop right off the page. There's one thing in here, too, which is actually pretty violent, where the Punisher actually shoots a guy through the head. And it's interesting, too, because you get to see both perspectives of it.
Does this have a mature thing on the front? Remember when they used to do those things?
Yeah, this has parental advisory.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because this one definitely shows the bullet, you know, popping through the brain skull. And, but yeah, it's a really fun story. You know, for as dark as it is, and it's kind of cool to see how these two characters are interacting. And it really is only a split few minutes of their time, because the majority of this story takes place in 4 minutes. And I don't want to give too much away, because obviously with that little amount of time, there's
you
a lot.
You still kill a lot of people in 4 minutes.
Yeah. So it's really, really cool. Phil Noto. God, that guy's a genius with his artwork. I don't know. Like, it was so hard for me to not continue buying this book just for his artwork alone. But this is one of those where I figured I'd pick it up in trades later.
So did you, when you were at the shop, you just flipped through the first cover of Punisher and said, oh, it says it, you need to read Black Widow too? Or
actually, no. Because of solicitations and all that, and I always look ahead, try to, and see what's coming out. I saw Punisher, and it said, this story continues in Black Widow number 9. Now, they were smart enough. Now, the Punisher cover is a little bit less obvious, where you've got the Punisher kind of in the background with a Black Widow spider crawling across the front cover.
So that could be Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Not really. Black Widow is Black Widow.
It could be, what was it, Madam?
Madam Web.
Madam Web?
Yeah.
It kind of looks a little like her thing, but Black Widow, she's sitting on a throne that is the Punisher skull. So they were pretty fucking obvious with that.
Could just be a giant skull. A throne made of giant's head skull.
Yeah, a weird giant alien head thing. But yeah, big congrats to Edmondson for kind of thinking outside the box for this story, and being able to write it so that it made sense. Because I think one of the hardest things is where you've got these two characters both simultaneously doing things. It was even one of these things where they're kind of showing the time lapse go down, because what I will say, and this doesn't ruin anything, there are bombs set to explode.
Is that within 4 minutes time? Is that kind of
when they first meet up, Black Widow and Punisher, there's 4 minutes and 15 seconds left before the bombs go off. And it's interesting because I looked and there's dialogue, and you see that 16 seconds elapsed based on like the little time in the box. And I went, And then I went back and I like,
did you time yourself reading?
I did. I timed myself reading it out loud, and I was like, holy shit, that's pretty damn good. Yeah. That's about how long. So I think a lot of thought went into this, and I that's kind of why I went, this is a smart couple comics. And you know, do you need to know what's going on in either one? No, because you're never going to always know. That's the unfortunate part. But if you want something a little bit different, yeah, you're shelling out $8 for two books, but it's cool.
Did it wrap up like well in both of them? Like
they are both going their own separate ways. This is literally they cross paths and now they're back out.
But with this whole thing with the bombs, though, I mean, that just, I guess you, if you don't want to give it away, but like it just seems like there had to have been some sort of resolution.
No, the bombs go off.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, well then that works for that plot point then.
Yep. Now bombs, the bombs were a good piece to help move the story along and get them off of the area where they were at.
Okay.
So, both books gave you enough background in the opening page and then through the small bits of dialogue to where you can understand. I mean, Black Widow's a spy. Punisher's a bad motherfucker. That's all you really need to know. So, but yeah, I would recommend checking these out. And it was interesting after reading the first one and then the second one going, that's the exact same dialogue. And I didn't notice that Edmondson was writing both of them at first. I kind of forgot. It was in the back of my mind. And I didn't think, and I went, wait a second. And I went, son of a bitch. That's cool. So, yeah, check them out.
All right. I want to start off my review with pretty much saying, Derek, I won. We are in the year 2099, and Doc Ock is still Spider-Man.
No, he's not.
He is in this comic book, and well, it's 2099, so therefore, he's still Spider-Man. I think. Oh, fuck, no, that wasn't even the bet. It was just if he was a ghost or not.
Yeah.
Fuck. Damn it. All right, well then. And it makes me sad. I was all happy for this book because I'm like, I won, and the book's back out, and it's awesome because I love Superior Spider-Man. But I thought I won the bet again, but I.
So this is Superior Spider-Man 32.
But
why didn't they call this one 19.1?
Just to continue. Well, because it's going to continue on the story. Of not that story, but a whole different, I don't know. Their numbering system, but just this, like Dewey Decimal, I have no fucking clue.
But this issue takes place during the events of Superior Spider-Man number 19.
Yes, and there's a few caveats that I have with this, such as within number 19, when the time displacement thing went off, and all of a sudden he time warped outside of his facilities there, and then he started fighting Spider-Man 2099. Somehow in these pages, though, he knew Spider-Man 2099 was in the past area. Do you recall reading number 19?
Yeah,
because it seemed as if when they first fought, he didn't know who the fuck this other Spider-Man was. So this kind of like. Canon little wise, you know, I think they messed up a bit there by having the little retelling of him seeing Spider-Man 2099 come in the past and him being displaced to the future.
I'll have to go back and
I know, and I was just too lazy to go actually do that because
yeah,
I'm lazy. But regardless, this set up the whole entire premise, such as with Spider-Man 2099 coming back, you kind of have a void of a Spider-Man within the future, so which is why he feels he was transported there for the time being. And this sets the course for the Edge of the Spider... Well, saying the Edge of the Spider-Verse, this is setting course for this huge, giant Spider-Man crossover that we've talked about coming up soon. So this one, still written by Dan Slott.
Well, plot.
Yeah, the plot was... Well, yeah, he came up with it, but yeah, Christopher Gage, I guess, did this story.
Christos
Gage. Oh, fuck me, I can't read.
Giuseppe Camuncoli did pencils. You got inks?
John Dell. I can read that one.
And Antonio Fabela did colors. Chris Eliopoulos did letters. Did you get the regular or the Scotty Young variant?
The regular.
Oh. Oh, wait. I should have known that. I picked up your books for
you. Yeah, I was going to say, you should know which.
I didn't even pay attention to what was there. I just like, oh, there's a Scotty Young variant. No. But, sorry. Yes. That's what happens when you go on vacation.
Even gotten past the second page. It starts off right away with him being warped within. So, obviously, we know Spider-Ox's story, having come to the end of Superior Spider-Man, and how Ghost Peter came back. Right now, though, we still have...
I gotta wonder how many people don't know, because that was how long ago? A year and a half ago?
Yeah.
People are going, what the fuck's a Ghost Peter? Gotta go back and do some research, kids.
Yep. So. But we have this, so now we have, though, still this Dr. Octopus Spider-Man still running around. And it was one of those things that was teased with this whole Spider-Verse thing, is that there would be Superior Spider-Man. And this literally is setting it off for creating what this whole event's going to be. And I'm still kind of confused a bit by the event. I don't remember what the hell the bad guy's name is, because I started picking back up Spider-Man right before his death and all through Superior. So a lot of the stuff that's happened more in the past couple of years, I've heard bits and pieces of, but I never truly read. So I'm not even sure who this bad guy is, who I guess was a formidable bad guy of Spider-Man's before.
You got me. He could be a brand new guy for all I know, because I was in the same boat. I hadn't read Spider-Man since I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. And actually, I probably know less about Spider-Man's history than you do on this one. But yeah.
But this, you know, we have Doc Ock, who is pretty much, I have to say, I love the wordage in the future. You know, this shocking, you know.
Oh, yeah. Shock you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, shock you. In that bit head.
Yeah. I want to go back one moment. When he was kind of falling through time and universes, that page, did you notice all the stuff in the background? Like, all the different alternate realities? Like, up in the upper left-hand corner, you've got the Captain America wearing the flag, like, kind of like a toga, which that was an Alex Ross thing, but I don't remember what that was from. You've got a Deathlok in there. You've got the Uncanny X-Men 141 Days of Futures Past cover. You've got Old Man Logan shown in there. Is that the 1812 thing in there, Tony?
It looks a bit, yep.
Yeah. And I'm like, that's just kind of cool. Just a little bit, you know, a couple little nods to these alternate timelines and universes.
Well, this is also set up where he's smart enough that he kind of realizes he's going through the fabric of time. So when he got to 2009, like I said, he assumed that's where he ended up at. Just mm-hmm. by looking at the building, seeing the different architecture, he's like, all right, I kind of got my bearings right away. I don't need to go explore this city. I know what I'm doing. However, he doesn't realize that the Spider-Man of the future is not like the Spider-Man of the past, which right now Doc Ock has started within the timeline of number 19, the police are on his side. He's got his bots doing everything. He's pretty much looked at as like the hero of New York City right now, whereas these people are trying to capture him, and he gets saved by who's the guy?
Oh, it's Spider-Man 2099's brother, because you've got Miguel. Oh God, what the hell is his last name?
O'Hara.
O'Hara, yeah, and it's his brother Gabriel.
Yeah, it's kind of saying, you know, we've met before, and I like that it was a quick for any new readers who are just picking this up to get a sense of what the Spider-Verse is going to be. Doc Ock even says, "Well, shoot, I wiped off Parker's memories; otherwise, I would have remembered having come here before through Parker's, you know, time travels of his past." So that was kind of a cool nod, but obviously we know Doc Ock is a brilliant genius, and he's like, all right, I'm just going to make a time machine. I know how to do it, and they've got probably enough technology here to create one.
Yeah, which I thought that was, you know, there were so many smart moves in this book, just in general, you know, that everything from the how does he end up in that era so that he can have the technology to make the time machine.
Well, not only just a time machine, but an alternate reality time machine, too, because obviously time travel was banned within this realm, this mm-hmm. future, but also seeing an alternate reality, hopefully it could get him back to his correct. Because if he just time traveled back into the past of this universe, it is a different universe, which some things in the past could have been different to change it to make it 2099. So he's smart on that front, too, understanding the multiverse and there being other realities. Now, with that, I'm reading this at first just as a Superior Spider-Man book. Let's just follow what Doc Ock is doing. Understanding that it is setting up for this Spider-Verse thing that I've mentioned a bunch of times, but it's not until the very end that you're like, holy shit, this all worked concisely? Is that cohesively? Yeah.
Concisely?
Yes. To create this Spider-Verse. Because now he's got the technology.
It worked good.
Yeah. He's got the technology to go to multiple worlds. And it was kind of cool, too, where he reprogrammed the personal computer assistant to look like Anna Maria.
Yeah.
And she's following him. And he's got his backdoor protocol where if he goes to a world that's dangerous, he'll get zapped right back at least to 2099 so that he has a home base to go to.
Yeah.
But as he sees, there are Spider-Men dying in all these universes going with the same puncture wounds. I have no clue who this bad guy is, but he's pretty damn powerful. And like I said, this whole thing set up this thought process of Doc Ock thinking, I need a team. I need to save some of my other counterparts, mainly because self-preservation. If this thing's going through the multiverse killing other Spider-Man, pretty soon he'll probably come for him too. So why not beef up on more people and have a team of Spider-Men? So within that last page, when you see he's recruited these different Spider-Men.
Yeah, he's got six there besides himself so far. You've got a Spider-Woman. You've got a six-armed Spider-Man. You've got one who's kind of from like a Saudi Arabia type, you know, Prince of Persia almost type thing.
And I love the spider logo on that one. Like it's just a small thing, but it like it looks more kind of like Arabian. Arabic. Yeah.
There's just some really nice touches.
And so with this, like I said, it set it up perfectly of explaining what's going to be going on with this event. This bad guy's out to be hunting spiders. How they're all coming together within a universe. They got the technology now to do that. And this was also a double feature where it kind of explained one of these other Spider-Men.
Yeah, the alternate universe guys.
Yeah, a one that is a ruthless kind of killer. And Doc Ock really likes that.
Well, and it's cool because, you know, it's like Wolverine trained me. Now, this is old school Wolverine, like classic 1980s brown and yellow, you know, Chris Claremont era Wolverine. And I thought that was pretty cool. Now this one was drawn by Adam Kubert, and damn, that double page spread in there where Wolverine's, you know, sorry, spoilers, getting killed.
And I like that too. It was like, I didn't ever think anything could kill Logan, and kind of gives the reader a sense of this bad guy is pretty powerful to be able to do that.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean it's just that little side story. I don't know. I mean, like for me, I'm a big fan of Kubert, So, you know, I preferred the art in that one a little bit more than Cam and Coley, but Cam and Coley, man, it's still a beautiful book overall. I mean, just some really, really nice layouts just in general in here. But, you know, and I think the use of the splash pages, because there were a lot of them in here, but they were done so well that you're not like, oh, splash page, oh, splash page. You know, I think that really worked. But
and I'm looking forward to the next one to pretty much, I don't care what they do, as long as it's showing him going to other universes and recruiting Spider-Man, like, that'd be really cool.
And do you need to get that, Tony?
Yes, I do. There goes my phone. It would not be me without my phone going off.
Yeah. Couple things on this that I did want to touch on. You and I were talking, like, earlier this week, before we had read this, and I pretty much mentioned to you that I was just about at the point where I was ready to drop Spider-Man. You know, it was a great fun run, but I read so many damn books. I like to try different things, and there are very few things that I stick on forever. Mm-hmm. And this one was starting to lose me a little bit. Nope. I'm hooked back in.
It's all the Superior, man. He is the best Spider-Man that's ever been.
Well, I think...
I hope they save him somehow at the end of this and can transport him. This was probably one of the best books I've ever read. Different and amazing.
Here's something for you, Tone. We don't know exactly where his mind went. And since he does have time travel, universe travel ability, he might be able to go back in that split second before Peter wipes him, and he can steal another one of these Spider-Man's bodies.
That's what I'm hoping. That would be really cool.
Maybe the six-arm one, so he could be more like Doc Ock.
Yeah.
That would be kind of cool. There was one other thing in here that I did want to touch. There, when Spider-Ock shows up in 2099, there's a comment in here which I found kind of funny. Now, obviously this was written at least a while back, but I don't know how much Dan Slott or Christos Gage, how much information they were given about some of the changes at Marvel, particularly the fact that Thor is becoming a woman,
mm-hmm.
or that the new Thor will be a woman, I guess, is the thing. And they're talking about how Spider-Man's, quote, parading around in the open like he's the second coming of Thor. Well, in 2099, if we already know that the second coming of Thor is going to happen in 2014, are they referencing that historical fact, or shouldn't it be the third coming of Thor? Or maybe even the fourth.
Yeah, that's where I'm like, I don't know if that's, yeah, supposed to be gender specific or what that is.
I'm just,
but, like, but it's just kind of like, okay, it could be something.
All I'm gonna say is I think it's referencing the historical, you know, fact of the second coming of Thor, because we all know that Thor is not gonna stay female Thor forever.
Yeah,
it's. She's not, like, the original Thor's not Uncle Ben, so he'll be back. But cool, yeah. I'm glad actually we had a chance to chat about this one, because that was definitely a fun book. So that was Off the Shelf, which by the way, we neglected to mention, brought to you by Grand Con. You guys can check them out at grand-con.com. Grand Con is a gaming and comics convention here in beautiful Grand Rapids, Michigan. And we're going to be there.
We are?
Well, yeah.
I might be a little inebriated, but my body will be there.
Well, my mind's telling me no, but my body's telling me yes. So, go check them out, guys. It's September 19th through the 21st here in beautiful Grand Rapids, Michigan at the Crown Plaza Hotel. It's going to be fun. So, and we can actually chat a little more Spider-Man with the superior artist himself, Mr. Ryan Stegman.
Yes. So that would be cool. I always love talking to him.
Yeah.
So before we get into some news, got it's kind of news-ish, but also barback type thing, you know, go support Well, no, I guess it's not really a bar back because it's not really backing them, but it is kind of because it's for the Legal Defense Fund.
Oh,
but the Humble Bundle from Boom Studios. So we'll just throw us as a bar back, I guess, because it's going to help out an awesome charity.
Well, and it's a limited time, which most bar backs aren't around for long anyway. at the time that this comes out, there's probably going to be around 10 days, give or take, left on this thing.
You can get a lot of books.
Yeah, and they've gotten roughly 11,000 downloads, and it's funny because when I saw this press release emailed to us, I went and clicked, and I mean the thing had just started, and they were already at like they had 215 bundles sold, and that was like 2 days ago, and they're at 11,000 bundles now, and I'm like, holy shit! Like so, you know, I'm curious to see how many they can get on here. Some big suggestions from me on here: Dead Letters, Hit, Six Gun Gorilla, Translucid, The Woods, and Hacktivist are all really, really awesome things. And what I've noticed is the longer it goes, it seems like the price tends to go up.
Yes, that's because what this does for Humble Bundles is you can pay whatever price and you can get the first tier of whatever it is that they're selling or giving away. So this, obviously, the Boom comic books within that first tier, you could pay just a penny and you would get those. But to give a little more incentive to have you pay a little bit more or whatever, you have to pay the average to unlock some other goodies, such as Translucid and Six Gun Gorilla, which at the current time is $10.03. Obviously, the average can go up and down. If there's still 1,000 people just only paying a penny, that would obviously bring the average down.
Okay.
But then you have more people who are like, well, I want to give $20 because I feel it's worth my money to give these people $20. That average goes up, and normally that's the case that happens. You'll have some more philanthropic. Yes, that
or
those people
or the Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where Char's like, I'm a full on rapist. Is that a philanthropist?
But you'll have more of those people who will then give like $100, which brings up the average. And then what they also sometimes throw in is something that's, you know, just where they feel is a good spread for this. They have pay $15 to unlock even more. So if you paid $15, you get all three tiers. If you paid $10.03 at this moment in time, you get the two tiers. And then, like I said, you could pay from a penny up to $10.03 and get the first tier. And
or
with that,
if you want to be top contributor, you have to spend more than $155. Somebody spent $155.
Yeah, see, and those are the type of people that are like, I want to give them, I want to support them. And the greatest thing about Humble Bundles is that you can choose where your contribution goes to. It goes to either the Humble Bundle website so that they can do more of these. It goes to the studio or the execs or whatever it is that is being offered. Or you can go to the charity of the choice for that Humble Bundle. So as I've always said multiple times, check out Humble Bundle any week. Even if it's not just the book section, they have a lot of video games, indie games particularly, that you can get really, really good price for some of these that go for a lot more than that.
The one thing that I thought was pretty damn cool, Tony, just glancing, take a stab at how much all these books would cost you, regular price. Like regular cover price?
Oh shit! Me can't do math well.
Take a guess, and I know it's a quick glance.
Say 100 and that's it. 200.
$365 worth of books.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's a good price for.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, pay more than the average because you really want to read Six Gun Gorilla, which actually just got nominated for some Harveys. As did Jeff Stokely, who I interviewed here a year and a half ago. He for like best up and coming artist, and I think best artist as well. But Translucid, Tony and I we talked to Claudio and his wife, whose name is eluding me at the moment. Why can't
Chandra?
Chandra, thank you. Writers on that, The Woods, Hacktivist. We talked to the guys from Hacktivist too. God, those books are so good. You guys, I mean, spend the money. If you haven't already bought these, this is a great chance to read some awesome books. So enough of that one, I suppose.
All right, yeah, let's get into some news. First and foremost, we can talk about the best movie ever, Guardians of the Galaxy. Kid you not, hands down, probably, besides, all right, we all know I love the comic book, so I'm going to be a bigger diehard fan of the movie than most people. But I've talked to parents who have gone with their kids to see the movie who have no clue a Marvel movie they've ever seen that enjoyed it, that loved it. They thought that it really did come together. You did not need to know any of these characters, and they introduce them in a way that you're like, oh, I kind of get that background. And it killed it at the box office. So far right now, globally, it's done $219 million as of August 6th. And that's a shitload of money.
Which I think one of the funniest parts is that I heard one of my friends I was talking to this morning told me that it's already made more money, like in its first week or whatever it was, than Green Lantern made while it was in the theater's first run, second run, and on DVD, Blu-ray. Combined.
Wow. So. It does hold the record now for the biggest August release, because obviously August is where they kind of, the studios put those other movies that they don't think are going to be a big summer tentpole. The thing that makes me the happiest of this is not only proving that Guardians is a great franchise, it's going to let them say, hey, let's take some more chances on more movies instead of getting the same old, same old.
Mm-hmm.
So kudos to that. Speaking of studio heads and movies, did you see that Warner Brothers has backed off from Captain America Weekend?
No.
The two studios were going head-to-head with that date in May, and DC decided to budge. So they said they're just moving. To be honest, I don't think there's people on the internet that are fanboys that are saying Marvel won, DC lost, but really I think we all won.
Well, here's a question. They move ahead of Captain America, are they going to win?
See, that's what I don't know. Like I said, I don't think it's a win. It's a win-win for everyone to not have to shell out that much. Because, yes, I'd go see both of them anyways, but I don't know necessarily I'd go on the same weekend.
Yeah.
Like, that's just too many movies to...
I personally would like to see them go head-to-head.
Oh, yes, you know, it would just be interesting, because that doesn't happen at all, and well, I kind of would have...
This is a game of chicken, and ultimately, it's a cockfight, or a measure-your-cockfight, and come on, put your money where your mouth is, let's see who's actually going to pull more in on one weekend. Because, like you're saying, the people that are going to see those movies are going to go see both those movies, regardless of when they're released. Whether it's we see one movie this week, the other one next week, it'd be kind of fun to see which movie had a better opening weekend. If they played by the same rules, meaning they both maybe have, like, you know, a midnight show on Thursday, and that's it. But, you know, none of this, let's start at Tuesday at noon and call that the weekend.
Yeah.
No, yeah, you know.
That's why those numbers sometimes I'm just like, whatever, even though I swear by the Guardians numbers, because those are, in fact, awesome. But going back to speaking of like weekends and everything, another bombshell that DC dropped is that they are doing 10 movies, superhero movies, by 2020. So yeah, that's about two movies a year for the next 5 years. And that's a on par with what Marvel has already had planned, but they've had it planned for years past.
It's a lofty goal, considering that they do, what, roughly maybe one movie a year?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about one movie a year. You know, because you get, you know, you've had your Batmans, you've had a Superman, you had a Green Lantern. Maybe one movie every year and a half. Am I missing something else from DC?
That's about all that I can think
of. Well, no, you had the Watchmen in there.
Yeah, but that's...
that still counts. I mean, it's still a DC property.
True.
Yeah.
So it's like it's looking like we're not getting out of superhero movies at all and anytime soon. And I'm okay with that, to be honest. Long as the story compels it, be good.
Do you think there's going to become oversaturation?
No, because I think that a story told on the big screen could be a standalone story that you're interested in these characters, as long as they don't try to start forcing the comic books to adapt to the movies and vice versa. I'm just paying a little bit. What's comic books $4.99 now? Some of them $3.99, $4.99.
Anywhere from $2.99.
So doubling, yeah. Doubling a comic book price to go see a 2-hour story told on the big screen. I don't really feel oversaturation.
Yeah, I'm just.
I love movies. I'm a huge movie buff. I hope there's other movies that are being made to explore other creativity besides just comic book sources.
Well, Hollywood has shown years ago that they don't have any of their own original ideas anymore. So, you know, well, at least they're pulling from a good place.
Yeah, speaking of, you know, pulling from a place, we also know out of these movies that are coming from DC is the new Batman vs. Superman, which is starting filming right now. And a radio show over in Detroit was doing what most people do, making fun of Aquaman. And Zack Snyder...
I know two people that love Aquaman.
To be honest, after reading this call-in from Zack Snyder to this radio show to kind of defend Aquaman, you know what? I'm going to kind of lay down, you know, the making fun of him. I can't think of a good pun, but I'm going to lay down the trident and just kind of say, okay, I will take a chance.
Are you saying you're all washed up?
Yeah. let's see where this story goes.
Yeah. You didn't even bother asking who the two people were that liked Aquaman.
I know Kevin and...
And Chris's 3-year-old kid.
Oh.
and I don't know which one has the better argument. Although Zack Snyder had a pretty decent argument.
Yeah,
on
something
why
that I didn't
Aquaman
know.
Doesn't suck.
Yeah, when he called in, you know, he's word for word, he goes, you guys are being disparaging a little bit to Aquaman. Just a teensy bit. I mean, I don't like giving away things about the movie or anything like that, but Aquaman has some cool powers that I think people are like, oh, what? Does he talk to animals? That seems like he does, or fish, or whatever. But, you know, the cool thing is that Aquaman had his trident, which this is personally something I didn't know, that can actually cut Superman's flesh. That's news to me, and that's actually badass. As well as him being as strong, and I do remember reading this in the comic books, he is as strong as Superman because he can go to the depths below the sea, and whatever reason, that kind of puts him a little bit cooler powers besides just fish talking. So, I know.
And riding that seahorse with the saddle on it?
Yes. But Snyder continues to go, but anyways, not to say he's in my movie or anything like that. He's just pretty badass, and he has the potential to be badass. That's all I'm saying. So, like, him pretty much saying that he's going to be in the movie, shut up, you guys, whatever, I thought is kind of probably the coolest random thing that a show could have expected from the director of the movie.
Yeah, that was, well, you know, and actually, I kind of threw something out on our Twitter last minute saying that, you know, seeing if anybody had any questions. And, you know, we did actually get a question from Chris Krieger saying that, you know, he was kind of curious if we thought that was like cool everyday, you know, guy, or if it was, you know, kind of amateur. And I gotta say, it's cool everyman,
yeah,
thing on there. So, but yeah, there's I don't know. There's a lot of good stuff out there. Speaking of kind of going back to what we've been talking about, the extensive amount of movies that are planned. Fan Bing Bing, who played Blink in the new X-Men Days of Futures Past, which I will admit, I won't have seen Guardians until probably tomorrow. So right now, that's my favorite comic book movie, at least current comic book movie. She played Blink in the movie. She was quoted as saying that she's contracted to appear in the next 4 X-Men films, which makes me insanely happy.
Well, Blink I always loved as a character, but you have to think, too, she was a predominant person within the Age of Apocalypse storyline when those comic books came out. So that's a given. But I think the fight sequences that they did for Days of Futures Past with her were phenomenal. I mean, it's like Portal. You're jumping from here, punching here, that I think they can have a lot of fun with that character mixed up with some other characters.
Well, and I think especially if you're not going to have Nightcrawler come back, which they could, but they may not, you now have that character with that ability to kind of do some of those, you know, she does portals, but it's still teleporting.
Yeah.
And she's a lot prettier to look at than Nightcrawler. This is something I'm really excited to talk to Mark McKenna about and see what his thoughts are. I mean, we talked to him briefly at Motor City about this, but he's also going to be at Grand Con. And so I'm really excited to talk to him about, because it hadn't come out. It was like a week or two away from coming out when we talked to him in Motor City. So I'm really curious to see what he thought and all that. So there were some other movie announcements. Just a real quick mention. Arcana Comics has a book called Amnesia, which Sony has picked up to do a big screen adaptation of. So we'll see. Let me look and see if there was somebody. They've got producers, but I don't see anything listed as far as anybody directing or writing. I take it back. Christopher McBride is going to be the director.
Okay.
So, but yeah, just wanted to drop that one. Tony, what else did you have out there? Anything?
I was mainly looking at the movie news and anything Guardians. So
okay,
I don't have a lot more.
I got a couple other things. You like cereal?
Who doesn't?
Yeah. You like Booberry?
Only because it's funny to say.
You like Frankenberry?
That's almost as funny to say.
You like Count Chocula?
That's really funny to say.
So, some pee-pee.
Some people?
Some Booberry. This is like saying boobies and pee-pees.
Have another drink, Derek. your words come out.
Some pea berry cereals. okay, so anyway, DC's got some artists doing some new cereal recreations. Tony, I can't even fucking talk. anyway, Jim Lee redesigned Boo Berry. Dave Johnson did Frankenberry, and the super duo of Terry and Rachel Dodson did Count Chocula. And these are going to be coming out for a couple months because they only release these cereals in the fall time for some reason.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously that's
Halloween
area, but I guess I've never really noticed that.
Yeah, they're excuse me. They're really cool. The one thing, I mean, like, you know, you can definitely, like, the Boo Berry, I don't see, like, a Jim Lee signature in it. It's incredibly well done. Dave Johnson, I can definitely see, you know, some of his influence in there. But the Dodsons with their Count Chocula, did you see that one, Tony?
Oh, wow.
That is clearly Dodsons.
Yep.
Like, I'm like, okay, that's got their style on it. I'm like, that's cool. You know, they did their take. They're all really neat. And I guess there's going to be like some comic strips and stuff. I think like on the back of the box, it'd be kind of cool more if they did like maybe a whole, like if they did a whole comic book and put it inside, you know, like the comics that you got in your cereal.
Yes. Back.
So a couple other quick notes.
I got a cool thing. Boom, it has a new book coming out called Cloaks.
Yeah.
Which it looks sweet because it combines magic with spying. So it'll be kind of like
magic spies.
Yes. Or spy magic. Or
magic spies.
Yes. So, I don't really know much more about what this world's going to be set up to be, but obviously knowing that these, you know, secret agents are going to have, well, presumably cloaks on, but as well as being able to cast spells, be a little bit different than the normal gun James Bondish type thrillers.
There was a press release from Boom, and if I'm remembering correctly, it was talking about magic mixed with black ops, and I liked that. I was like, all right, I'm down with that.
Would it be black magic?
Black ops magic?
Yes.
Yeah.
Black magic ops. Magic ops.
Blockums. I don't know. There was another thing from Boom that came out, and I don't know what this one's about. I just went a little Charlie Kelly there for a second. This is that Boom is kind of teasing something, which, you know, they're very good at doing these teasers. But they had some stuff teased that tied in with the JFK assassination, the Illuminati, and the Roswell UFO incident. And I glanced and ignored it at first. I'm like, yeah, okay, you know, it's like a newspaper article. Flying saucer spotted over Roswell. And then you have all the lines blacked out.
Mm-hmm.
Did you look at those in any detail?
I did, because I looked at it and I'm like, oh, there are some words not, you know, crossed off that I read that make up sentences that are kind of cool.
The Roswell one says, we are all under control. The Illuminati one says, they cover up the truth. They are everywhere. And then the JFK murder one says, government planned execution. Who is next? And I'm like, all right. But, you know, Boom is quickly becoming, if they have not already become, my favorite publisher. They're just a fantastic, creative group of people out there. I'm curious to see what they're doing on that. Another fun book that's coming out, and I don't know exactly when, is a new book from Dark Horse called Pop. And the concept I thought was really cool, which was, and I'm quoting, you know, on this from Fandom Post is where I got this from, and I think they took this direct from the Dark Horse press release. But it says, what if the world's pop stars and celebrities were literally products grown by the world's wealthiest and most depraved minds, and one of them escaped? And there were a couple preview pages that were up, which for some reason my tablet's not showing me anymore, so I don't know if either they got pulled down or if it's just the fact that I'm on a tablet versus my laptop before. But it's just kind of interesting because they're actually growing the Biebers and the Britneys of the world in little pods, and then here you go. Here's this month's flavor.
Did you not know that's how it's done right now?
Can I get one? I'll take a Katy Perry, please. last thing. Tony, pull out your pocketbook.
Okay.
DC's got more variant covers. And guess what? They're Legos. You love Legos.
I do love Legos. I just... Well, I'm lost words. Marvel did it first.
Yeah.
I mean, they had the Lego version. I mean, it's... I mean... This, I guess, I'm just done speaking of any variants. Like, really, if it's variant news, I don't even fucking care anymore. Like, seriously, you can have fucking Mr. Hanky, the fucking turd from South Park, be on your covers and whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Mr. Hanky the Christmas Pooh?
So, yeah, Lego.
Yeah. Yay. Yeah, I think that about does it. Although there was one other little bit of news, and Tony, I know that you know, we here at Drunk on Comics, we like two things, primarily.
Mm-hmm.
We like drinking, and we like comics.
Yes, we do.
Well, Warren Ellis and Mike Allred have teamed up together.
To make a booze?
To make a book about the world behind the booze. And it's called The Spirit of Bacardi. And this is a free digital download that you can get at Bacardi's website. Now, you do have to be 21 in order to get it. But it's
but all you have to do is put in a birthday, kids.
Shh. Put it. Get your dad to do it for you. But no, Bacardi.com is where you go. And, you know.
I hope to God this is the story behind the bat.
No, it's not. It's actually.
That'd make for the best thing. I have no clue what the hell that Bacardi bat is. Like, maybe Maybe it's a comic book about the man who made Bacardi who was reading Batman at the time and decided to stick a bat on the logo.
this is actually, this book is pretty much about Emilio Bacardi, who is the son of the founder of Bacardi, Don Facundo, which I haven't got to read this one yet. I don't know if you have or not, but I'm curious if he's the son, why has he got a different last name? But anyway, it's the history of Emilio, and it's kind of his life and all that, and it's set, you know, back in the 1800s, and you know, there's a lot of interesting shit apparently as far as the history. So I read a little interview with Warren Ellis and Mike Allred, and it sounds like it could be cool.
My mind's turning upside down now. There, I'm just starting to think of it. Used to be a lot of product placement in comics. Now comics are product placement in products, like with the cereal and with Bacardi's website now. Like,
they, well, more power. Comics are becoming the advertising medium for all things cool.
Yeah.
Like Legos. Yeah.
Those were always cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, that does it for news and notes. Tony, what should we do here next?
Do you have your indie book?
I do. Ready? I do have indie.
Well, what do you have since I forgot already?
Well, before I bring that to your attention, this was a really cool book. And you know what else is cool? Drunk on Comics t-shirts.
Yay!
Go to Daw Apparel, DAWApparel.com. Put in the code DOC20 and get 20% off your order. And you can look cool wearing your Drunk on Comics t-shirt. And all your friends will be like, dude, where'd you get that? It'd be like, Daw Apparel, what, bitch? And then they'll get one too, and then everybody will be cool. So, I don't know what the hell's wrong with me today. Okay. Indie Turnpike this week. I've got The Bunker, number 5, written by Joshua Hale-Fialkoff and art by Joe Infernari. And I'm going to actually repeat pretty much what I said on Twitter when it comes to this book. And, oh, I'm sorry, this book is done by Oni Press, so I should give a little bit of a shout-out there. But basically, you know, what I said previously online is that the bunker is the best mindfuck I've ever read. And honestly, this is what comics are all about, right here. If anybody hasn't read the story or doesn't really know what's going on with this yet, this is about a group of friends that are burying a time capsule. Now, these are, you know, mid-20s, just mm-hmm. out of college, burying a time capsule, and they find a bunker, kind of like the Hatch in Lost, and when they go down in it, they find letters written to themselves from themselves in the future.
It just felt so real of how really a mindfuck that would be. I don't believe it. This is bullshit. I don't know. Wait, this says stuff that only I would know. Like, and that clicking of the wheel of like them realizing, holy shit, this is real. Such good storytelling.
And, you know, it's in your own handwriting. You know, it's just, you know, that everything that is so well done. This one, and here's why. I'm going to explain a little bit why I say this is the best mindfuck I've ever read. Every issue, you're like, okay, all right, I'm getting it. It's making sense. All right, yeah, I see where this is going. And at the end, no, guess what? Bend over. Mindfuck. Because they throw something else at you every fucking time. And it's like, I swear to God, my brain's going to explode. And then I pick up the next issue and I'm like, oh, all right. Yep. Now I see where you're going. Get to the end. Guess what? Bend over. Boom. Mind fuck. All over again. This book is so damn good. The weird part is that the one guy, Grady, who becomes president of the United States, he actually comes back in time. And so now you have future Grady and present Grady there together. And that's hard enough to deal with, you know, because, and Infernari did a great job on illustrating this book for a couple of things. And I want to say it's a fairly large cast of characters, you know, as far as an ensemble group, and for people that are all just kind of your general everyday people. When I first read the first issue, because it was introducing so many people, it was a little bit harder for me to kind of distinguish, okay, who is this again? Who is this again? Because there's just a lot of people. But Infernari does a great job at being able to draw them so that you can instantly recognize them. And where he does really well is when he's showing the older Grady. When you see him, you instantly know it's the older version of Grady. They don't have to go, hey, older Grady, you know, mm-hmm. which it's kind of a nice thing. This issue, and I'm spoiling the mind fuck in this one. This issue, he's not the only future version that came back. And when they show her, you're like, holy shit. And again, it goes back to the great artwork where you don't have to be told. I'm not going to say who it is. I'll at least leave that. But you wouldn't expect any of them to do it. But, you know, especially this one character, I'm like, damn. So if you just went out and picked up this book and went from there, it's written well enough that you could just pick up and go on. However, volume one of the trade came out on Wednesday too. So you can get issues 1 through 4 in a trade and pick up issue 5 and you are current. So go pick this up. Amazing work. I mean, the scratchy style of art in here makes it a little too uncomfortable because it's almost too real. And there's a little bit of sci-fi, obviously, in this one. You've got time travel and whatnot. But it's more – well, Tony, we talked to Fialkoff at C2E2. Mm-hmm. It's more about the what would you do if you were placed in this position, if you had the ability to – save hundreds of thousands of lives or destroy hundreds of thousands of lives, but your life is increasingly better. What do you do? And that's a lot of what these struggles that these characters are going through in this book. So please go give this book a shot. Well worth it. So that's Indy Turnpike.
Well, this week, I was on vacation down in Florida, which brings the booze inspired booze in a book this week. Now we're going, ooh.
Did you take your flask?
Yes, I did take my flask down there. However, I was thinking of having it full of booze going through security. But I decided against that only because of the liquids thing, and I didn't want to be arrested. So I actually emptied out, or I drank it all before going through customs. But you can get your sweet-ass retro flask from Ink Whiskey, and... hey, the flask went through customs, so there's that. I would suggest not having it full liquid only because that's a big no-no.
That's a big no-no. But yeah, inkwhiskey.com, $20 includes shipping.
But I so had it full going to the airport, and I'm like, maybe I should get rid of this. Dump it down. No, why dump it anywhere? Why not just take a couple drinks?
That's awesome.
But this is kind of a blast from the past as far as the comic book is concerned. Only because it came back out in 2003. There are very few Simpsons comics that I've read, but sometimes there's one that you pick off the shelf that you're like, that's kind of cool or interesting concept, or the title inspires you. And this is a Futurama Simpsons crossover titled Simpsons Futurama Infinitely Secret Crossover Series, or Crisis. So it was a two-book thing spanning Futurama into the Simpsons world. And the reason why I'm putting this book is because while I was in Florida, I went to Universal Studios. And while I was at Universal Studios, I went to Simpsons Land or Simpsons World or whatever you'd call it. There's Krusty Land there. There's all these different places. And they had Moe's Tavern. And you can walk into Moe's Tavern and you can buy a Duff beer. So I got to try Duff beer, and being inspired by that, I had to pick a Simpsons book to pair it with.
How was it?
Miller, Bud, like, you know, like a regular American lager.
It's a lawnmower beer, basically.
pretty. I mean, there are some subtle differences of like a PBR to a Budweiser, but yeah, it was just kind of a normal beer. It wasn't something spectacular. So there's that. However, I just came up with one off the fly because of something that you said earlier with that spirit of Bacardi.
Yeah.
There's only one booze that I can think to pair that with. I mean, it's rum, so Heaven Hill rum.
Yeah. What about Jaeger?
No,
it'd have to
Heaven Hill rum is cheap, and you can get that book for free.
Yeah, but Jaeger girls walk around all the time, you know, at bars, going, "You want the free shot of Jaeger?" And then you get the free shot of Jaeger. So
is that how they sound?
Most of the time, I'm not really paying attention. I'm just like, going, "Give me the booze." So
so anyways, yeah, you should get those. If you're obviously, you'd have to go to Universal Studios to get a Duff beer, but go there and at least try it to say that you did.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah. Do you got any other books that you read this week?
Yeah, actually, it was a really good week. I forgot one last week that I needed to mention. Fanboys versus Zombies. This would be Four Stories of the Apocalypse. It's Volume 5 trade paperback. It's the final trade paperback. Everybody should go get this because we are drawn in it. This is the one that we were in issue 20. God, I loved that series. And I'm really sad that it ended, but I'm happy on how it ended. It was a good way to go out. The Woods, number 4 from Boom Studios. Lazarus, number 10. This book is getting better. And then Enormous, number 2. Those were my tops.
Yeah, I didn't get to really read much, but of course I'll have to mention Rocket Raccoon because gotta love me some Rocket. And Terminal Hero was interesting. So that's all I really had time to since I was on vacation. And
yeah. Oh, Squitter, number 2.
Yep, picked that up. I haven't read it yet. So
okay. All right. Well, I think that that pretty much wraps it up. So
does it for me?
Yeah. Time for let's go get some boo berries and pea berries. All right. Keep reading your comics, guys. We'll be back next week to talk to you again.